Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Now, back in the day, foraging was a necessary means of survival. Today, it's an increasingly popular culinary trend. Today, you can find wild food and edibles in your local fields, neighborhood, even in your own backyard. And they can make for some delicious meals. Foraging isn't easy, though. You have to go into it knowing what you're looking for and how to harvest and cook it. Fortunately for you, we have some experts in the studio here who can answer your questions about foraging. Jim Gopp manages both Fire Roasted Catering and the Meat Market in Great Barrington. Fire Roasted uses a large volume of local and foraged items in its dishes and cooks and exclusively over live fire. And we've talked about that on previous shows. He's a member of Berkshire Farm and Table, an organization that promotes regional food and culture in the Berkshires. Dina Falcone is a clinical herbalist, avid gardener, wild crafter, and permaculturist. What is a permaculturalist?
Somebody who practices permaculture. Does that answer your question?
That's a cop-out, Dina. That's not a good way to start the show. She teaches classes about wild foraging and cooking, is the founding member of the Northeast Herbal Association, an organizer of Slow Food Hudson Valley. She's also the author of a beautiful book entitled Foraging and Feasting, a Field Guide and Wild Food Cookbook. Well, if you've ever had any interest in foraging, and I know on these Food Fridays that we often take calls in this realm. If you've ever had any question about that, this is the day to call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Again, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet us if you wish at WAMC Vox Pop, or even email voxpop@wamc.org. But we love your calls. It makes for an interesting program. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Jim and Dina, nice to have you both here today.
Yes. Hello.
Hello. Lovely to be on your show.
This is great to have you here. And I understand you prepared jokes in the hopes that Alan was hosting today. No, you don't want to say them on the air now? Save them for Alan. I understand.
Sorry, no.
I'll pass them along. You tell me after the show. Mm-hmm. So you... How, Dina, did you get to this point? Was it always an interest for you, or did you just stumble on foraging?
My interest began as a preteen, as an 11-year-old. I was interested in food as a healing modality, eating food for health, and that segues right into foraging. The wild greens are extremely nutritious, nutrient-dense. They have things that are called secondary metabolites that are nutraceuticals is a term that's used for that, mm-hmm. or things like essential oils, bitter principles. So there's a medicinal component to eating wild, and that was, I think, the draw. Now, one of the draws.
There can be a tricky aspect to foraging, in that some things you find out there may not all be good for you. So how do you learn that without going to the emergency room?
Really good point. It's very important to be able to key a plant out, which means how to ID it, how to properly identify it. I'm sure Jim is teaching some of that too. The book Foraging and Feasting has everything to do with that and the work that I do as an educator, so that it's like learning a new language. It's not hard. It just takes patience, time, practice. And so the theme for me, I'd say the last 30 years of my life have been focused on IDing and learning the properties of the plants that grow around my region. So just being an observer is a big part of this education, you know.
For instance, mushrooms alone. I mean,
so mushrooms,
good, bad, great, not so great.
Mushrooms, I don't teach mushrooms, and they're not in the book because they're much too risky. Mm-hmm. Even though I know maybe 12 or 15 of them myself and I use them, I don't educate about mushrooms, so even mycologists who are incredibly educated have not had good, you know, results. So I don't know, Jim might have a different opinion about mushrooms, but...
No, I completely agree. Even with some other edibles, I don't really like to pick something if I don't know what it is, because I just find it's... a couple of years ago, I was looking, and I came across these mushrooms, and I weren't sure if they were chanterelles, and there were so many of them. They were so beautiful, mm-hmm. and... So I decided not to because I didn't want to because, I don't know, I don't want to take the risk. And then sure enough, when I went home and did enough research, it was indeed chanterelle, so I missed out. But it's much easier. I'd rather go with somebody and actually have them show me what's going on mm-hmm. an area. And same thing with like beautifully illustrated books like Dina's are fantastic, you know, field guides for things. But I always find it helpful just to have someone who knows what they're doing show you.
That's Jim Gopp, and Dina Falcone is here. And Dina, you wanted to add something to that?
I was just going to say that we're an impatient culture. You know, the Americans, we want to eat. Mm-hmm. And Jim was just exhibiting patience and sort of, restraint, which is part of learning this new language, that if you don't know the wild plants, it's really important to focus and observe and learn before eating. Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe never eating.
It's a hell of a self-preservation tool. Let's face it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. And let's go to the phones. Tam in Albany has a question that I'd like to know the answer to. Tam, you're on.
Oh, hi. I heard you mention permaculture,
yes.
And I really don't know what that means.
Nor do I. And we're going to find out right now.
All right, here you go.
Thank you.
Here you go. So permaculture is a design science. Does that answer your question?
Keep going.
It has to do with holistic thinking and designing systems that relate to each other in a way that makes more of what comes out of that. And typically it's done on the ground in the gardens or on landscapes, but it can be done to design villages or corporations, I suppose, or whatever. It's a design system, so you're thinking about the waste stream and that feeds into the organism and creates more. So there's a zero waste closed loop system. That's the ideal.
Fascinating philosophical concept to then translate that to business. I would never even think that.
Right. Or to the ground, which is where we do it, on our land and our homestead. So it's, if you take the chicken yard, for example, which is an edible chicken yard zone on our land, the chickens, there's about 35 chickens that live there, and it's an acre that's fenced off, and there's shrubbery, edible berries, fruit trees, and lots of other herbaceous perennials. And so they coexist and create this incredibly fertile zone. So we're using the waste stream from the chickens to create incredible peaches from the peach tree, or the blackberries, which you guys are going to taste later.
Oh, you brought blackberries.
Great.
Fantastic.
Yes.
You know, the Food Friday is always fun. And Tam, thanks for the call. I hope that answered your question.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. The number to call, by the way, is 1-800-348-2551 if you want to weigh in. We talk foraging today with Jim Gopp of the Meat Market in Great Barrington and author and clinical herbalist, avid gardener, Dina Falcone. 1-800-348-2551. One of the great things about Food Friday is that often there's food. And by golly, there's food. I did not see the blackberries, but a big fan I am.
You are?
Yeah.
Great. Well, do you want to start tasting?
I think what we'll do is we'll take a break at about 20. We'll take another call.
Okay.
We'll take a break at 20 after. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, will come in, and then it's off to the races. Oh, here she comes now. All you got to do is say food, and she's here.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Peter in Albany. Peter, you're on.
Yes, hold on.
Hello.
Yeah, I just want to get my speaker off. I was wondering if they have, either of the guests have dealt with the subject of invasive species, things like that are very prevalent, like Phragmites knotweed, I've heard can be considered an edible, and I'm wondering if they have any input on anything edible that way, and whether that could end up being a way to help control the invasive species because we'll eat them.
Dina's nodding.
Yes, absolutely. You're right on it. If you know with 100% certainty that you have the right plant, that it's edible, and you know how to eat it, when to eat it, and how to prepare it, you're in for a delight and an abundance. You know, the food there, the food is prolific and everywhere, and definitely invasive species are our gifts. So that's a way to rethink it. Yep, and I'm going to feed some invasive species in this office later.
You are?
Yes.
I know Jim came in with some weeds in his hand. What did you bring, Jim?
Oh, geez. And there we have some, we end up having some Queen Anne's lace, some salsify, some lamb's quarter, just some people will know it as wild spinach. But one of the things I wanted to say about the invasive species is Japanese knotweed is really, really bad. There's this phrase that goes, if you can't beat it, eat it. So we use a lot of that in our catering company. We actually will harvest it when it it's sort of probably about 2 feet maybe.
Yeah.
And nothing really below it because it starts to become slimy. Some people call it Japanese snotweed.
Oh, nice.
At that point.
Thanks for saying that on the radio. I appreciate
sure,
it very much.
Sure. So, you know, you can grill it or we'll make a lot of different like barbecue sauce out of it. We actually make a alcoholic drink with it.
You're kidding me.
You know, we end up making a syrup. You treat it just like rhubarb and then you can shake it together with gin to do something like a carbonated water to finish it off. So it's really nice.
Well, you had me a gin.
Yeah.
Peter, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it.
Very good, thanks.
Well, let's go to Kelly in Florida, New York. Kelly, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a black walnut tree in my backyard, and it is producing a tremendous amount of nuts, but I don't know how to get the nuts out of the green hard shell.
Okay.
Like, I watched a YouTube video, and I smashed them, but I ended up destroying the nuts.
Okay. Anybody on the panel want to...
Well, I would just... my subjective feeling about black walnuts is that I don't like their flavor. So over the years, I've tried different ways of harvesting them, and I actually borrowed a very fancy black walnut-specific desheller and sat there for a good couple of hours to create a good amount of nut meat and ended up still not liking them. So that's been a few years back, and I don't recall the name of that nutsheller, which is considered, you know, the most efficient way to process those nuts. The other thing is you don't harvest them now, of course. You're going to wait till maybe September. Mm-hmm. You've got a bit of time. And that green outer hull, that you can just smash with your foot or roll over with something heavy. And those green hulls, not the actual nutshell, those green hulls... are actually medicine, so that's what I go for. We have black walnuts on the land too, and I'll use those green hulls for the outer soft meaty stuff that's called the hull, but it's confusing here if I don't show you. Anyway, so that's my answer, but Jim might have an opinion. Yeah.
They're just so, I mean, they're falling from the trees, so would I just
immature,
let them...
not ready. Don't touch those.
Not ready. Okay.
They're gonna swell into. I'm trying to give you a 2-inch, maybe 2-inch diameter when they're full. Maybe a little bit bigger depending on your tree.
Mm-hmm. But they will drop off the trees.
They
right?
will drop off, and the squirrels will help, and the chipmunks, and they'll all be banging on your roof if they're nearby your house.
Yep.
And then you'll gather them, and some people do love that flavor, but it's going to be mid-September, maybe late September is my recollection right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Kelly, we have to take a break here, but thank you very much. It is Vox Pop. It is Food Friday. Oh, the things we learn. Oh, the things we learn about permaculture and foraging and more of your calls coming up. The lines are lighting up. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Spirit House Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world, wine tastings Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Sundog Cider at Solaqua, locally produced hard cider from New York Hudson Valley apples, unfiltered, naturally gluten-free, handcrafted at a revitalized solar-powered mill in Chatham, New York, sundogcider.com. Hudson Valley Fresh Dairy, a partnership of 9 Hudson Valley dairy farms, providing fresh local milk, cream, sour cream, and yogurt to our neighbors. HudsonValleyFresh.com. Mass Mocha, North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting the Bang on a Can Marathon, featuring composer Steve Reich and Wilco's Glenn Cochi on August 2nd and Jason Isbell in concert on August 15th. MassMocha.org. And Liberty Fresh Market, a market supporting individuals with developmental disabilities in the workplace. LibertyARC.org.
Fox Pop on WAMC. It's a Food Friday. It's a free-for-all here in the studio. It smells like weeds, and we have food here. Dina Falcone is here. Jim Gopp is here. Your calls at 1-800-348-2551. This is usually the part of the show where we try some food. And Dina Falcone believes she's going to frighten me.
Because, no,
yes,
I didn't
And you
say
know
that.
What? You're right.
I didn't say that, but he looked at a jar on the table, and he said, what is that, a urine sample? And I said, why don't you say that on the air?
Well, you've done it. You've done it, Dina. We're off to the races now. All right, what do we got here?
So this is a wild green pesto.
Okay, now pesto, right?
Yes.
Basil and some spice.
No basil what? Here at all.
Okay, well.
So these are wild greens that were harvested this morning for you.
Okay.
At 7:30 a.m.
All right.
Out in the wild garden.
So I taste it before you tell me what's in it?
I'm not going to tell you.
Really?
You have to guess.
Oh well, that. Okay, it's going to be a tough show. Okay. And the recipes are available online, my producer says. And so it is so. WAMC.org/VoxPop is one way, or you could search Food Friday and you'll find it. All right, so this is a cucumber, obviously not foraged, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Organically grown.
And this is your pesto that you made today, not traditional. All right, here we go. It's good. You win. It's delicious.
It's weed pesto.
Okay, now you can tell me what's in it.
Okay, let me introduce you to what's in it.
Okay. Look at that.
So this is called Monarda or wild bergamot, Monarda fistulosa, and this is mostly what's flavoring your pesto. This is a native wildflower. Have a little nibble of the leaf and a little nibble of the blossom. Come on.
Really?
Go for it.
All right. You know, this is not really my... It smells spicy. It smells like pesto.
Well, what does it smell like? There's some other odor. I'm wondering if you're going to get it. In the leaf more, if you taste the leaf.
All right. I'll taste a couple more leaves.
What do you get out of it? Come on. Are your taste buds that affected by so much coffee?
And cigarettes, obviously. All right, why don't you help us out here?
So, oregano-like.
Oh, yeah. Well, it does smell spicy, yeah.
Thyme or oregano.
Amazing.
So it contains the same essential oil, a constituent in it, which gives that flavor. It's powerful, though, so you don't use it in huge amounts. You know, you're putting it in the pesto. You're adding it to garnish those beautiful light lavender blossoms. We can sprinkle in the salad if we get to make the salad today, and we'll just garnish with that. You can put it right on the little cucumber round, so it's beautiful.
I got to say, that is delicious pesto. And it really has a traditional pesto. You'd know it was pesto.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you have invasive species in that pesto. You have garlic mustard, wild bergamot, and then wood sorrel, Oxalis stricta. So that's another one. I should have you. All right, let me dump.
I don't know if I should have eaten those flowers, so many of them, because.
What are you feeling?
Well,
what's going on?
I'm seeing some purple mist and.
Yeah, you know, I love it.
Let's
good
go to the
good.
Let's go to the phones. Mike in Fort Ann. Mike, you're on.
Hello. I want to talk about look-alike weeds or look-alike plants that you can get caught up in. There's. I heard you mention Queen Anne's lace. Now that would be the edible version of. What also looks exactly like it is wild parsnips, which is highly poisonous. I'm not sure if that's actually accurate. That was my question. Is that accurate, and how do you tell the difference between the two?
Well, Jim brought in the Queen Anne's lace, also known as wild garlic, and I actually, for beginners, don't even go there.
Really?
Because there are two or three of the most deadly plants that we have in our region are of that same plant family. They really don't look like it. But to a novice, just a distant view. So I stay away from teaching about that initially. But your question about the wild parsnip, it is actually not poisonous. What it is, though, it is, if I can get the term, it creates phytophotodermatitis. So it's when you're hot and sweaty and you touch the plant and the sun is out, it will burn your skin. So you can end up with these burned lesions on the skin, which can be very bad. But the same thing with cultivated parsnip, so it has the same properties, and rue, and other cultivated plants have that. So the question of harvesting is the issue, but the root of the wild parsnip is actually considered an edible. You just need to know when to harvest it.
Dina, okay, may I ask one more question? Or
Jim wants to weigh in on that.
Well, I actually just had a question for Dina. It was, now, hogweed, is that a part of the same family?
Same family, not the same plant as wild parsnip.
Okay.
And that's a bigger plant, also with the same issues of burning the skin.
Extremely dangerous.
Yeah, extremely. Yeah.
Extremely dangerous if your arms aren't protected. you know, it's not dangerous in some sense, but yes, you need to know how to harvest it if you're going to harvest it. And hogweed, you don't even harvest. That's you, as far as I know, I don't know any uses for hogweed.
Okay. And you had another question, Mike?
Yeah. These balls that I've been finding on some wild weeds that grow out in the woods, they're called galls, and they're formed by, like, a bacteria or infection from flies. I know it doesn't sound like it would be edible, but I was wondering if you knew about those and if they are edible.
I love your question, and I don't know the answer.
Okay.
But it's an interesting one, whether those galls are edible. Good question.
There are two kinds, and we just covered this yesterday. Thank you very much, Mike. There are two kinds. We covered this on the gardening show yesterday. There are basically a bug that's in there, you know, baby bugs, or there's sort of an infection. And so I suppose, unless you like bugs, you wouldn't want to eat those.
Hey, it could be a good thing if we knew it.
All right, let's do that on another show. All right. All right, let's go to Lara in Mount Tremper. You're on.
Hi, it's Layla. Thanks for taking
my
call. What a great topic for a show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Just a comment that I made. Armenian barak, which is like a spanakopita with lamb's quarters last night, and it was just heavenly. And my question is, if plants can find you, that they can start to grow in your yard, if you need what's in them nutritionally.
There is that theory that people think that plants will grow by you if you need them. I really don't know, but I think that when the plant shows up, that we want to definitely learn about it, what its function is. Is it edible? Of course, don't eat it until you know it's 100% edible. But whether a plant actually is meant for you or not, I don't know. But since it's in your backyard, it's worth you noting it.
I have, you know, I had a time when I had severe anemia, and lamb's quarters and amaranth showed up in my yard, you know, within a year, and spread, and I love them anyway. So dandelions. I thought it was very interesting.
Well, the beautiful thing is that those plants are almost everywhere. And so the idea, you know, part of the thing that I love about this foraging theme and my life's theme is, you know, uncovering the gifts that are there. We just don't notice them. We don't know how to, you know, acknowledge what already exists. So.
Lara, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye now. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It's a Food Friday. One of the most interesting ones we have ever done. It's on foraging and something so many people are interested in, and you don't hear all that much about it on the radio. So it's very nice to do this show. Jim Goff is here from the Meat Market in Great Barrington and also Fire Roasted Catering. Dina Falcone is a clinical herbalist and an author and avid gardener, and I've learned quite a bit today. By the way, when you were learning this over the last 30 years, what's the biggest mistake you ever ate?
Oh, you know, I was thinking about that. I don't think that I ever ate anything that I didn't know because, yeah, no mistakes.
Really?
How do you like that? No. Oh, but you know what happened recently, which was interesting, is the day lilies, which are also edible. Some of us have them blooming right now. Beautiful edible flower. The shoots are also edible in the early spring before they're about 6 to 8 inches tall. So we go out and harvest that and make a salad of it. And it's the first time that I reacted, but it gave me guess what?
Gas?
Diarrhea.
Oh, great. Oh, great. You're not serving that today, are you?
No.
Because we've got a half an hour to go. And okay, let's go back to the phones. Carrie in Plainfield. Carrie, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Great show.
Thanks.
For years, I've been picking wild mushrooms, okay? And my two favorite are what's known as the hen of the woods. They come out around September. And in the summertime, I do pick the chanterelles. In the last couple of years, I've been picking a mushroom. They're pretty big. They're quite interesting looking. They're the giant puffballs. I don't know if your guests have ever heard of those.
Of course, sure.
And I can't find a great way to prepare them where they taste that good. Do you have any ideas?
Well, with the puffballs, they have so much water in them. So the thing that I have found is just get a really, really hot pan going and throw them in there. You know, dry, because what's going to end up happening, you know, salt them a little bit so it draws out some of the moisture.
Right.
And then as you're cooking with that extremely high heat, the water is evaporating. So, and then you just end up finishing it There will be some residual water left over. You just finish it with some butter and a bunch of herbs. It almost looks like when it comes off, like French toast, kind of like my grandmother used to make.
Yeah, okay, right.
So, exactly. But it's very good with butter. You know, it's a classic combination with mushrooms, butter, thyme, any other sort of, you know, hearty herbs you want to put in there. That's basically what I would say. And if you could, you could mix it in with another mixture of mushrooms, too.
I mixed them in an egg batter, like French toast.
Yeah.
Done that way.
That would be fun.
You can put maple syrup on them.
Yeah, you can. You can give that a shot. Yeah, certainly.
One more quick question, if I could.
Sure.
I always cut the mushrooms, okay? But I know people just pull them out of the ground. And they come up basically in the same place every year. Is it cutting versus pulling them out? Is there really much of a difference if you do it one way or the other?
Well, I can give my opinion on that. It's I always like to cut things off because when you start ripping things out of the ground, it disturbs the soil. And, you know, I've heard that that ends up giving much more room for things like the wild garlic to set in there. And that's one of the most dangerous invasive species because it has a toxin that it releases under the soil from its roots and kills everything else around it and self seeds. So that is, you know, definitely one of the most dangerous things. And the more you disturb the soil, you know, it's kind of like, it's almost like an open wound, you know, things can get in there. So I would stick to the cutting.
Okay, thank you very much.
Certainly.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for the call. What are you doing, Dina?
I'm holding up two leaves of wild garlic, of garlic mustard, actually, just so Jim, I know he beat it up for a moment there on the airwaves, but I just want to say it's one of the most invasive species, and it's incredibly tasty, and we're going to have it in the salad. And we had it in the pesto. So as much as it's invasive, and yes, you want to just check it and watch it and not encourage it, but certainly note how to ID it and then eat it. It's a worthy, nutritious green.
Okay. Yeah. Are you going to fight here, you two?
Well, no, not at all. Okay, no, all right. It is delicious for sure. Yes, certainly.
And we'll have our host taste it in a little while.
Why do you laugh with glee?
Yeah.
All right, let's take another call. Tom in Saranac Lake. Tom, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I kind of have a two-part question. You guys talk about, you know, harvesting and eating the invasive species. And I was under the impression that we weren't allowed to possess them, have them in our possession. You guys, is there like a special permit you have or something like that? Or am I completely wrong?
You're completely wrong.
And you're sure of that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
These plants just arrive. And you gathering them basically is a way of controlling them, and nobody's going to arrest you for it. Mm-hmm. In fact, you'll get an award from the gardening club.
Species work, and they didn't want us to have anything, you know, on us or whatever when we left.
Interesting.
Well, the only thing I could think about that is it would be a similar case like the Asian ash borer beetle
Exactly.
You don't want to bring other things into areas that may not, you know, invasive species that may not already contain
them. So that makes sense. So if it's in your backyard and you're going to prepare it in your house, no harm, no foul.
Exactly.
Maybe?
I don't know.
I would say that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Definitely. Should have had a lawyer on this show. I had no idea.
My second question is, the other thing I was wondering was that you're allowed to take stuff from state land, because I know in the case of wood and stuff like that, you're not supposed to bring it home, so people can't go out and harvest trees and things like that. Is the same with you know, foraging edibles and mushrooms and things like that?
Just don't tell them.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, well, that's you know, I guess that's caveat emptor. You do what you can get away with, but obviously from our legal department, I would say that we're not encouraging you to break any sort of laws.
Right.
I'm not sure if you are breaking the law. You'd have to find out from the particular state park that you're in and what their rules are. But you're right. There's often a lot of discussion, or not discussion, but warning against bringing anything out of state land. And so you have a point there.
Right.
But these things just show up and will disappear really quickly. And the gift is there. So I'm saying not to wipe out any stand of anything. But if you were to just, you know, casually grab a nibble of this and that, I think you're fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just always kind of wary when I got a big handful of turtle heads when I'm walking out of the woods.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot for the call.
Yep, thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's go over to Wendy in Plainfield. Wendy, you're on.
Hi, actually, it's in Greenfield.
I'm sorry.
I have a new property. No problem. I have a new property that has a ton of pokeweed on it. Could you talk about what you know about it and recipes?
Oh, you got to turn your radio down just a little bit, Wendy, okay?
I know. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
So pokeweed, Phytolacca americana, is a plant that is considered toxic And so eating poke requires some serious know-how. It's not in the book that I wrote, and you would only eat it in early spring. I do have a woman, a friend, who eats it regularly, and she has a technique of boiling it, I believe, two or three times. And then, and again, the shoots are below your knee or shorter, so you're just eating spring shoots. And I know in the South there's the tradition of eating poke, but I don't engage in that tradition. So,
okay.
But there's warning, and yeah. Do you have anything, Jim, on that?
I don't, no, no.
I really want to thank you for that, because I've just been told by a bunch of people to eat it, and that you just kind of cook it up like spinach.
And don't eat it now.
And just to do it young. Well, the thing is that the land has been really disturbed a lot, so it's been regraded, so it was stripped, so they're coming back.
Got it.
So I know not to eat the ones with the flowers,
mm-hmm.
but I was under the impression that as long as they were still not flowering,
no.
I could eat the leaves.
Short. They need to be very short, I would say 6-8 inches tall. And again, it's not my area. I really, many years ago, decided to not eat the poke because I don't really like to have to parboil things two or three times.
Yeah.
It's just not my style. Yeah. And if there's that much toxicity, why do I want to eat it?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, the root of it is used for medicine, and it is also highly toxic. So you need to know how to use it medicinally.
Thank you so much, because I would have cooked some up tonight.
No,
Wendy. Thanks for calling when you did.
Okay,
yeah, really.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
So it seems that there would be a lot of folk information out there that is not correct and perhaps dangerously so.
Mm-hmm.
So a book like yours, Dina, would be pretty handy.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the whole idea, is to help people relearn the skills. We've lost these skills, so we don't know when, in fact, we can eat a particular thing, when it's delicious, when it's not tasty, when it's actually toxic, you know. So knowing a plant and its name and how to key it out is just one thing, and then knowing about when to harvest it and how to prepare it is a whole other thing, which is covered in the Foraging and Feasting book in detail, basically to take the person from that moment of observation all the way through to the kitchen, to the table.
Jim, you mentioned using, when in your course of work at Fire Roasted and at the meat market, some of these mushrooms that are wild. And so while Dina will shy away from that to some extent, you're okay with that?
Well, yes and no. I only go really with the ones that I know for sure, like the you know, the morels in the springtime, and chanterelles and black trumpets, and hen of the woods, the common ones.
Yeah.
You know, much like we were talking about, when something like Dina's book is absolutely beautiful. It has so many really fine illustrations in there. Those things are really good. It's what makes the internet, like, it's great, but it's also can be very dangerous, because there's a lot of, anybody can go up there and throw on anything.
Yeah.
And as like I said earlier, it's just best to go with somebody, especially I find with mushrooms, going with someone who's been doing it for a very long time. There's just
still alive.
Exactly. It was that phrase, there's bold mushroom hunters and there's old mushroom hunters, but there's no bold old mushroom hunters, because it can be very dangerous.
All right, let's take a quick break here. Zach Malloy, if you please, 1-800-348-2551 is the number. It's a Food Friday. It is Vox Pop. I sense that we're going to eat some more food in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from the Bee's Knees Cafe at Heather Ridge Farm, Preston Hollow, New York. Five-course farm and forage dinner, August 9th, 518-239-6234 for reservations. Berry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BerryPriceArchitecture.com. Cafe Capriccio, offering dining and catering with Tuscan cuisine in Albany, New York, and Neapolitan cuisine in Saratoga Springs. CafeCapriccio.com for reservations. Tanglewood, the summer home of the Boston Symphony Orchestra in the Berkshire Hills, presenting the Boston Symphony Orchestra, joined by violinist Augustine Hodelik, in music of Haydn and Beethoven, August 3rd, tanglewood.org. And Utica College, offering a post-professional Doctor of Physical Therapy program online, utica.edu.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Food Friday, 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Jim Gopp is here. He manages both Fire Roasted Catering and the Meat Market in Great Barrington. Dina Falcone is a clinical herbalist, a gardener, a wild crafter, a permaculturist. We've discussed that already. We'll have a test later on. And she's the author of Foraging and Feasting, a Field Guide and Wild Food Cookbook. And Jim brought weeds in. Dina brought all sorts of delicious stuff in. We've tried the pesto, and now we're going to try something else. Oh, you wanted to mention one thing about mushrooms.
Oh, I was just going to say that I do myself forage and eat the mushrooms of the 12 or 15 species that I feel confident, but I don't teach them because of the risk factor.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah,
okay.
Just say that. So I was thinking maybe we will have a sip of an agua fresca.
Okay.
A wild blackberry drink.
Ooh.
You ready for some of that?
I'm totally ready. All right, that sounds good.
And it actually has apple mint. So this is a wild mint infusing in the agua fresca. Ooh, I really shut that.
That looks good.
And it's got some raw honey as a sweetener. And I was hoping for you, my host, that there might be a little ice for you, because I think you're that kind of man.
You think I like a cold drink? Boy, you got that right.
But here's a little sample.
Thank you very much. And this is cold enough.
It's cold enough?
Yeah.
My ice packs are working.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go.
And this is for Jim.
Oh, wonderful.
These were picked this morning and then processed into this drink.
You can taste the mint. This is delicious.
Oh, I'm glad. Good, good.
It smells phenomenal.
It's a local raw honey. And of course, all the wild fruits can be made into this. It's a master recipe. This agua fresca is out of the book. I think Jessica's going to post it, but I don't know.
I think she is on our website, WAMC.org.
It's a way to use all the fresh fruit, all the wild fruits that come through, or cultivated fruits. Jim had brought in muscadine grapes, which won't be ready for another maybe 6 weeks or so, but they're going to be amazing in this drink.
Muscadine grapes, you
muscadine.
Said? Muscadine grapes. And
a type of grape.
Where would one find those?
In the woods, on the edge of fields.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times. I actually was driving in here today, and I live on a dirt road on a field, and there's all different kinds. That's where I got, you know, the chicory, the salsify. They look just like grapevines, and they have these bright red actual stems, you know, with some tendrils. But, I mean, if you look close enough, you can see these beautiful little jeweled marbles like that. They're really fantastic.
It's and they're fine. And they're when they're ready, are they sweet and tasty, or are they...
Yeah, they're sweet and tart, sort of like that. You know, look at some seediness in there. But, yeah.
And they make great agua frescas, this recipe. Don't forget, with your wild grape, you want to key it out properly because there are two lookalikes. Mm-hmm. They don't really look alike, but for the novice. And then also, if you've keyed it out properly, you can eat those tendrils now. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the grape leaves are a great gift to come in late spring. Mm-hmm. I would say for 3 weeks or so, we have tender grape leaves to use for stuffing fillings. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to the phones quickly here. 1-800-348-2551. Richard in New Baltimore. Hi, Richard.
Hey, and good afternoon. Thanks very much.
Hey, it's Rich Guthrie. We know you.
Yeah, right.
How
hi
you
there,
doing,
right,
man?
And everybody. And Tina, thanks very much for bringing all this up. And I do like to forage for the feast of the field myself, and I appreciate everything we're getting here. I just want to mention, though, one thing I tell people, by all means, to stay away from any of that wild Cerulean lookalikes, anything because of the poison hemlock, which is a deadly. This is the hemlock of Socrates, a deadly neurotoxin. Even a small amount can be fatal. So that's the main thing I wanted to draw attention onto. But other than that, you know, great show. Love it.
Yeah, that's great, Richard. And that was my point, too, with the Queen Anne's lace and the lookalikes.
Yes, exactly.
So the family of plants that fall into that category. Yes, I don't teach newbies that at all.
Other than to don't go near it.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. I've been foraging for so many years, and I've only met fool's parsley, which is a deadly killer, only twice, and the poison hemlock only once. So.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
Unless my field guys are misleading, I thought I came across it quite often in wet areas.
I don't know if you really did. But
the purple stripes on the stem. So anyway, just my cautionary note.
Good point, though. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
That's a great point indeed. Rich Guthrie, we'll see you on the next one, all right?
Yes, indeed.
All right, my friend. If you don't know, Rich Guthrie is our bird expert, and Rich comes on once every month or so, and we do a show about birds. I had no idea that he was into this sort of thing as well. Obviously, he has not had the poison hemlock. because he's still here.
That's right.
Doesn't that scare the hell out of you, though?
Yeah.
Well, it does. And
stumbling
that's why,
on something you think is okay?
It is. It's kind of, I've been, you know, it took me, I'd say 20 years to find a patch of poison hemlock. And when I found it, I felt very electrified by it. The fact that this could kill me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very serious. And then I actually brought people, you know, some of the specimens so they could see it. But it's a point is, yes, this we need to be very, very careful. But another point is that very few things of the plant kingdom will actually kill us, where the mushroom king, they'll kill us. So, but yes, the man just spoke about the three, well, the poison hemlock, fool's parsley, and water hemlock, I believe, are the three deadlies that are around.
Okay. All right, let's go back to the phones now that I'm sufficiently frightened. Martha in Gansport. Martha, you're on.
Hi. I've been eating lamb's quarter for about 20 years, off and on. Never that much because I didn't have that much in my yard. But now I've got a tremendous amount, and it's in the spinach family, and I'm eating it every day practically in, you know, pretty large amounts because it's free and it's nutritious. And I just was wondering, can I eat too much? I don't have kidney stones. I know it, like spinach, it's not good for people who have kidney stones. But in eating in a large amount, would I have any problems?
How much are you eating?
Oh, probably almost a small bowl full a day.
A small bowl full? Tell me the size of that bowl.
I don't know, a soup bowl or...
Actually, 6 ounces.
Almost a small pot.
Is it raw or cooked?
Oh, no, it's cooked.
You're eating about a pint of it every day?
Yeah, I would say. Okay. Well, maybe not quite, but almost. And I'm steaming it.
Yes. Well, if you...
It's very good.
Yeah, I think it's a delicious edible weed. You know, it's everywhere and people can benefit from it. Things to consider, the oxalic acid content is high, just like in spinach and chocolate and almonds and a lot of our common foods. So that's just something to be aware of, and what that means is that it could leach minerals from the body, so it could pull calcium and zinc and things like that out of the body. On the other hand, if you eat spinach, this is a much better choice in my opinion, and if you
Why?
Eat Swiss chard, it's more powerful, more nutritious, free, like she said. It's, you know, she doesn't have to drive to get it, you know, or grow it. It grows on its own. And it's delicious, better tasting, I think, than spinach. Although I love the cultivated greens. I'm not going to beat them up, but, you know, because I do. But so the point is, if you have dental or bone issues or kidney stones or gout-related or joint-related things, you know, you might just think about it. But on the other hand, people are eating tons of this oxalic acid in the diet anyway. So I can't answer exactly if it's...
Enough or too much.
Yeah,
or,
exactly.
Okay.
Right. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Martha. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dina Falcone, who is a clinical herbalist and author of Foraging and Feasting, a Field Guide and Wild Food Cookbook. Also by Jim Gopp, who is a manager of both Fire Roasted Catering and the Meat Market in Great Barrington. So let's talk business here for a minute. If all this stuff that you have brought is so delicious, and I can attest to the fact that it is, and it hasn't killed me yet, and people have known about it for hundreds of years, thousands of years, why is it not a commercial entity that quantity that you would be able to buy, say, at a grocery store, if it's so plentiful?
Well, there's a couple of thoughts that come to mind right away. First of all, we have been taught culturally that weeds are bad. So when we see ladies from Italy or Greece gathering wild plants as children, we might have seen that, and they were probably mocked for it. So there is a disdain. There is a negative association with gathering food from the wild. It's coming back into popularity, but basically America knocked it into the ground and made it just the worst sort of nasty thing, you poor, slimy thing, you know, like...
But I don't understand. I get where you're coming from, but this is a nation where times were hard. In the 1600s, it was not easy. You'd think the tradition would be there.
The tradition was there until, I would say, 50, 60 years ago, and then we lost it because of the industrial food system.
Mm-hmm. And, Jim, when you serve, now you deal with the public every day in the course of your organizations. Do you ever have people say, what is that? What are you serving me?
All the time, yeah. I mean, people generally, I find, they're always afraid of what they don't know or, you know, what they don't understand. So when we tell them something that will make, you know, like some sort of sauce with Japanese knotweed or, you know, something with some other wild edible, like, really? Isn't that a weed? Isn't that a grass? Or you can eat that?
Yeah.
And, you know, so I find with the food revolution or the food system that was happening when we sort of when it all became everything in a box, like,
yeah,
you know, yeah, the industrial food movement is, you know, even we'll have whole chickens in the case at the shop with the head on sometimes. Mm. And people are just like, oh, wow. You know, they just want to see the chicken breast, yeah, in a blue styrofoam container.
Many people don't even realize they came with a head.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Back to the phones we go. 1-800-348-2551. Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on Vox Pop.
Yeah, I tuned in late, and apparently, I don't know if you've discussed eating the very top of the milkweed plant. I don't mean the lower part, but the last three or four or five leaves up on the top. You can pick those off and rinse them and then steam them as you would spinach. And I was turned on to them by a friend 10 or 15 years ago, and they taste a little vaguely like spinach, but a little sweeter, and they're quite nice in a salad or something. And actually, my friend's father got stopped by the police. They thought he was picking marijuana.
All right,
but
so
is it safe to eat those? I've never.
So, Mark, can I ask you a couple questions? So, you're eating milkweed tops, the leaves?
The leaves.
And you're talking like two, they grow opposite. So, you're saying you're picking like the two terminal leaves, you're eating those?
Well, two or four.
Two or four, and you're plucking that and you're steaming it, or are you eating it raw?
No, I'm rinsing it and then steaming it.
And then eating it. And you've been doing that for 15 years?
Oh, at least.
And you feel good?
Oh, yeah.
And how much of them are you eating?
Not a lot. Probably, you know, a couple of times during the season when I see a milkweed patch, I'll pick enough to have for like a steamed vegetable on the side of with another dish, but not on a regular basis, no. I mean, not an everyday basis.
So my training was to not eat milkweed because it has toxins in it, and I know that's being refuted these days, and there's a lot of people eating milkweed and at different stages and in different ways, so I'm glad to hear you feel good in eating it. I only eat the flowers because I can cook them quickly and I don't have to put them in changes of water. I'm a bit, I guess, as much as I'm a radical weed eater, I'm sort of conservative, and but I also love to hear that you're doing well with it, and that helps me to know.
It's never bothered me. I've served it to guests, not in large quantities.
It has cardiac glycosides in it, according
to
some literature.
Okay, so that's not necessarily a good thing.
But it's
unless
fine.
You don't like the guests.
No, and maybe it doesn't. You know, literature is not necessarily all right.
Okay.
But it's the new leaves, the freshest ones. And not further down the plant.
Interesting.
Yeah, I really like them, but I don't do it very often. And because I don't want to damage the plant because of the butterflies.
Right.
Okay, well,
okay, thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mark. We appreciate it. We'll go over to Leslie in Conway, Mass. Leslie, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is a great show.
Thank you.
I'm blessed with, or cursed with, two bad ambitious Japanese knotweed, which you've discussed, and then bishop's weed, which is, I believe, also known as gout weed. And I was wondering if there was anything I could do besides go to battle with the bishop's weed, as I have been doing for years. Is there anything I can do with that would pull it off?
All right.
So my experience with gout weed is very limited. I don't have it in my on my land, and just recently I started to notice it popping up just a little bit. So I have not experimented with eating it. It is classified as an edible, but I don't know when, what part, and how you would eat it. So I can't comment, but I would say look into it. Again, be patient, research, learn about it.
Okay, we lost her, but she's still listening on the radio.
Learn about it so that then possibly you have a great culinary gift there on your land.
Okay, and so beside your book, what's a good resource for this sort of thing?
Good question.
Jim mentioned the fact that there's all kinds of bad information on every topic on the internet.
That's why I say be patient. and learn and gather data and take time so that you're not jumping to conclusions in a very short period. I would go to the library and pull lots of field guides out, and then you need to pull out edible plant books as well. Actually, for her, she knows what she has, so pull out lots of edible plant books. That would be my suggestion out of the library, and then start to collect your data and see how you want to learn and play with it. It is edible if you've keyed it out right. That's
my understanding. And it's always good to get a couple of sources and make
sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I see you're preparing the salad. We only have 30 seconds left. So perhaps you prepare the salad, we end the show, and then we have some salad. Is that a good idea?
Sounds great.
I wanted to feed you a salad made of weeds.
I'll eat
and
it.
It's got
I trust you now. At the beginning of the show, not so much. But now I really trust you. Hey,
go ahead, sorry.
Well, this was a lot of fun. And we're out of time. Do you have a website, Dina?
BotanicalArtsPress.com.
BotanicalArtsPress.com. Dina Falcone, Jim Gopp, where can we find more info about your stuff?
FireRoastedCatering.com and TheMeatMarketGB.com.
Fantastic. What a fun show and a delicious show. And I want to thank everybody who called in today. And sorry if you didn't make it through. Support comes from Terrapin Restaurant Bistro Bar Rhinebeck, hosting a summer farm dinner showcasing local farmers and the seasonal bounty of the Hudson Valley, August 5th through 7th, TerrapinRestaurant.com. Orange County Tourism in the scenic Hudson Valley, complete with wineries, craft breweries, Culinary Institute-trained chef-led farm-to-table restaurants, and more. OrangeTourism.org. Snow Farm Summer, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, the New England Craft Program for high school students, glass blowing, ceramics, digital arts, and much more. 2 or 4 week sessions, small group instruction, snowfarm.org. And Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance November 12th through 14th at the Gideon Putnam Resort, Saratoga Springs, with registration now open, currancompliance.com. Thanks again for listening. Thanks again to Dina and Jim for being here. Thanks to Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our producer, Zach Malloy at the controls, Colleen O'Connell, who took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. You'll be able to hear this whole show again on our website, wamc.org, in about 15 minutes. Thanks again for being here. The news is next. Have a great weekend.